It is my pleasure to introduce today's speaker, Robin Carr, the award-winning number one New York Times best-selling author of more than 40 books. Robin was first published in 1978 and has spent the past 30 years writing romances about strong women and real women's issues. Her Virgin River series struck a chord with readers and propelled her to the New York Times bestseller list in 2008. Where she continues to stay book after book. Please join me in welcoming Robin Carr.
Good, I can't really see you. It's a huge honor and terror to be asked to speak at a national convention, and I am most grateful for the opportunity. I would be remiss if I didn't thank Donna Hayes and her publishing team for not only the opportunity, but for being here to support me, along with my intrepid editor, Valerie Gray, and Liza Dawson. And also here is the woman I admire most in the world, my daughter. And that makes me a little verklempt. A few years ago at a national convention, a woman introduced herself to me and congratulated me on my bestseller. And I thanked her, and she said, "How'd you do it? How did you get your fourth book on the New York Times list?" And I told her that I sold my first book in 78 and had my first book and my first bestseller in 2008. And I watched as a look of horror came over her eyes. And I could tell that I was not her beacon of hope. In fact, it was the worst news she's ever heard. But she recovered herself beautifully and said, "Well, then you have paid your dues." And I thought, "Oh, crap, I forgot to pay the dues." If I knew there were dues, I would have paid them years ago. If I thought there was a checklist, check those things off one at a time, would have gotten here a lot faster. But there's no dues. And in fact, there's no checklist. And there's also no seniority list that gets the writer who's been at it 25 years a seat at the bestseller table before the writer who's been at it 3 years. You just got to pay your dues and takes your chances. And I have to see sometimes. If you had asked me 30 years ago how long I thought it would reasonably take to create a bestseller, I would have said maybe 5 years. And I would have been really, really wrong. I think what it takes is simple and complicated. It's my opinion that it's just the right book at the right time. And I don't know why. I started writing in 1975 with a notebook and a pen. And it was a very different world then. We didn't have computers, and we didn't have big chain bookstores where you could get a cup of coffee and browse. Bill Gates hadn't even dropped out of college yet, and Jeff Bezos was 12. There was no RWA, and I was writing historical romance, so I had to go to the library and sit on the floor in the stacks and take notes. I had a young husband. And he was not the kind of husband my daughter has or that my son has become. He was one of those old school husbands who had certain expectations. Things like laundry, house cleaning, food. And it would make him very happy to come home and find the children bathed and ready for bed, except that they'd usually been in their pajamas all day. Couldn't could have been the second day. And one day he said to me, "Robin, are you sure the children are getting enough attention as you pursue this hobby?" Yeah, no man would be saying that to me now, I'll tell you that. It was a very different world. There was not much of a mass market industry. There were paperbacks, of course, but they were usually reprints of hardcover novels. I'd been reading Anya Seton and Rosemary Holly Jarman, and I really wanted to write those wonderful historical novels. And then an interesting thing happened. Rosemary Rogers and Kathleen Woodowis burst upon the scene with their big, fat, sexy first edition paperback novels, and OMG. Oh, I reread those and reread those until they fell apart. They were so good, and I so wanted to be them. And I wrote my first historical that sold, about a 15-year-old virgin and a 33-year-old bachelor. Something that is now illegal in most states. Whatever it takes, girls, you know. I did belong to a small critique group, and we were very, very afraid of what would happen to our industry if the big chain bookstores came in and took over. It was unfamiliar, it was change, it was different, and it was hard to understand. And then something interesting happened. There was an amazing surge in romance. When I started writing, there was exactly one series romance publisher. And at what seemed like a very short time later, there were 30. And the demand this placed on the writing industry was enormous. And so many people who had wanted to be published and hadn't been had an opportunity. And writers were suddenly finding their way into the publishing industry. RWA was born. The surge created this huge industry that caused distribution to expand. Women were writing for women, and life was good. And then there was a glut in the market. And all of these new lines that had been expanding by leaps and bounds started shrinking the number of books they were publishing and closing down. Then Harlequin bought Silhouette, and here we are. Long contracts were leaving writers, were canceled, leaving writers looking for work. And I was just starting to figure out that in this business, change is constant, and that we have to be flexible, and that we have to move with the flow, and we have to be always learning. And it's not easy. But that surge provided not only an opportunity for some writers to get published, but it created icons. There were women writers in our business that were born during this period, that went on to become the most powerful women in women's fiction in the world. Writers with names like Nora. Yes. Sadly, I was not one of them. A tragic mistake. But after publishing for a dozen years, after winning a Rita before it was a Rita, I suddenly couldn't get arrested. I couldn't sell a word. I spent 8 years trying to recover my lost career. In my mind, there is no logical reason why I am standing here before you today. In fact, there's probably no logical reason that I kept writing for 8 years. It was hard on me to not be able to contribute to the family income. My kids were in college by that time. And my husband and I, same husband, husband and I had many long talks about whether or not I needed to just go get work. But he said, If writing is what you most love to do, then you'll write and we'll manage. I'll tell him he's been forgiven for that careless remark. I had to make peace with something during this period. It was an impossible journey, and I had to make peace with the fact that I might never be a best-selling author, that I might write my entire life and make a very modest living, and that I might publish some respectable but not hugely popular books. And I had to ask myself, if that's going to be what happens, is all this time I'm spending a waste of time? And it isn't. It wasn't for me. It was always about the writing, because the journey was always more valuable to me than the destination. And ironically, some of my best books, my most popular books, were written after I quit. And I quit a lot. I said, ah, hell with it. I quit. I'm not getting anywhere. And it was whenever I said I quit that I was fearless. And when I was fearless, I could write what I most wanted to read. And those books ended up being the best books I wrote. I've seen a lot of young women here over the past few years, few days. And many of you are working day jobs, holding your marriages and relationships together, taking care of children, trying to build yourself into writers. And you're scrambling. And you see yourselves coming and going. And it's so hard. And you're very beautiful, by the way. And you have very good shoes. There's been a lot of shoe competition going on. I've seen you, I know you, and I've been you, and I want to tell you something. This is as hard as it ever gets. This stage you're in right now, this is the hardest stage of adult life. You're learning, you're earning, you're saving, you're raising your families, you're holding your jobs together, you have an overwhelming desire to succeed, banging your fist on the door of that ruthless publishing industry. And it's hard to keep ahead of it, and you want to succeed or at least not fail at any of it. And it's going to be all right. And despite the pressures of your world, I sometimes miss that time of life. It's an intense and complicated and exciting and terrifying time. It's the hardest time of life, and it seems like there's so much at stake. And it's not an illusion. There is so much at stake. But it's going to be all right, and life becomes more rational and more manageable. The kids will grow up. Most husbands mellow. I recommend a mallet. Tenderized husbands. You'll learn your craft. You'll navigate these rapids. And you'll look back on these years with a foolish and sentimental longing, but from a place of experience and wisdom that you wouldn't trade for perky boobs or thinner thighs. Except my friend Candace. Candace said, I don't care, I don't want to get older. Candace apparently hasn't reckoned with the alternative. She will be missed. I'm not going to tell you to relax and enjoy this time of life, but I am going to urge you to live it fully and learn, take it in stride, and just believe me, it'll get better. Years ago, a very famous romance writer said to me, I credit 50% of my success with working hard, being on time, and being nice. And I repeated that to my agent, and she said, 90%. And I thought, well, hell, I can do that. I can work hard, be on time, and be nice. And I learned that it pays dividends to be the writer that people want to work with. And I kept hearing people say the squeaky wheel gets the grease, but I kept seeing squeaky wheels get replaced. And I thought a lot about being nice. Now, I don't mean a patsy, pushover, just somebody who negotiates their boundaries with a little bit of wisdom and kindness and political sense. And you just don't lose it. You just have to behave professionally. That's really simple when you get down to it. The Cherokee have a very, very good way of explaining this. They say each of us has two wolves inside of us, a good wolf and a bad wolf. The bad wolf thrives on ego and envy and anger and blame, and the good wolf thrives on humility, gratitude, generosity, and kindness. And the wolf that wins will be the wolf I feed. Now, I'm only human. My bad wolf gets hungry. He gets a nibble or two here and there. We're all only human. But if what goes around comes around, and I believe it does, at the end of the day, it will serve me better to feed the good wolf. So my agent paid me a very large compliment and told me, and said in front of a room full of people, through all the years of hard work, Robin was never angry. And I was so flattered and humbled by that. And I thought, boy, did I have her fooled. There were times I was pissed as hell. In this business, it's not difficult to find feelings of real outrage. And it's not easy to appear not angry all the time. But in professional relationships, we cannot be mercurial. We have to be stable. It's the only thing that will work. Now, I have a question for you to ponder, and it's not a self-fulfilling prophecy, just a consideration. If I could tell you right now that you will never be a best-selling author, will you write? Will you write differently? If I could tell you for a fact it will be 30 years, would you scrap this lunacy right now and get yourself a nice, stable civil service job? It's just a question. But what really drives you, because you really need to know that, is what drives you irrelevant once you achieve it? Or is it something that's very important to your lifestyle, your ability to live an authentic life? Because, see, success is not measured in lifetimes or decades or years. Success is measured in minutes and seconds. The cry of a healthy baby. A bottle of wine and a few good friends. That perfect paragraph. Right? Don't get attached. Success isn't measured in fame or money or power. It's measured in moments of satisfaction. And that's all you need. It reminds me of this story, is my favorite Twilight episode, The Twilight Zone. This real mangy, mean, badass rock star dies. And he's transported to the porch of an old farmhouse. And there's a little old couple in rocking chairs on the porch listening to old music from their Victrola. And he said, "What? This can't be heaven." And the answer is, "Well, no, it's not. It's hell. You died and went to hell." The old couple, however, is in heaven. and it's the same place. So I have a friend who started running, jogging, when he was 50, and he has finished several hundred-mile marathons. And I am very proud of him, and he is very satisfied with himself. And I am never doing that, not even if I'm being chased by a guy with a bloody knife. His heaven, my hell. I hope this comes easier for you than it has for me. I hope it comes a lot faster. I hope it's more efficient. But I really need for you to know something. That I am not unhappy at all with any of it. I would not trade one bit of it, and I wouldn't do it any differently. Well, except the dues paying part. I would have paid the dues a long time ago. But I'm delighted to have had some success now in this business. But the greatest gift this business has given me is the knowledge that I had everything I ever wanted before I had everything I ever wanted. I have a few survival skills if you're interested. Take your work very seriously, and yourself, not so much. Nurture a sense of humor. You're going to need it. Have fun. If you're not having fun, do something else. Write honestly, diligently, and fearlessly. Always write the book you most want to read. There's no limit to the number of times you can reinvent yourself. It's probably easier to create a trend than to catch one. If you stay in this business long enough, everything will happen to you. And finally, from Ann Radmacher, courage doesn't always roar. Sometimes it's the quiet voice at the end of the day that says, "I'll try again tomorrow." Thank you.
Have a little gift here for Robin. Wonderful speech, eh? Thank you.